Hi, my name is Wendy M. Koch, and I'm the author of A Gray Resort and my newest book, An Awakening, that just came out this past January. And you're listening to Ghosts in the Valley with Al Cooley.
Okay, today I have Barry D. Gilmer slash Barry White Crow as his Native American name. Barry is an experimental creator, intuitive member of Michigan Area Paranormal Investigative Team out of Traverse City, Michigan. Barry is retired after 32 years of working as a telephone lineman. One of his many tools was his unique capabilities of using the dowsing rods. These rods were used to locate underground water and power lines. During his investigations, these tools also came in handy to search for energies for seen and unseen. Barry White Crow's Native American heritage helps him to connect with the paranormal field. Welcome to the show, Barry White Crow.
Thank you so much. I appreciate you having me here.
Okay, I want to get to the first question, which is, where did White Crow come from?
It was given to me by an elder.
I've had Native American on here before, and usually it's kind of, I love hearing the stories on where the name came from, like a running horse or a...
Well, where it originated from was, it's kind of weird because today's the anniversary. My father passed away on this day in 2003. He was at our house at the time. And at the time, originally, my wife and I are both from Ohio and grew up in a little town called Lewisburg, just west of Dayton. But at any rate, at the time, I was still working for the phone company there in Cambridge, Ohio. So my father had gotten ill, and so he was on hospice, and he came to stay with us and passed away in our house. He grew up in the era in the Depression and stuff, and where you really didn't talk about your native heritage that much or whatever. The last couple years or so, he really got interested in it, and I tried to help him quite a bit because I had been going out to the reservation quite a bit and meeting with elders and stuff. And after he passed, for the next 3 days around our yard and stuff there, we lived on a little cul-de-sac out in the country or whatever. And we had like 5 acres, and each house on there was like 6 houses on this cul-de-sac that had like 5 to 6 acres or whatever. And then in behind us, there was like 400 acres of nothing but wilderness and stuff. And we, right, like I said, right after he passed, for 3 days, we seen a white crow. And so I told the elders that, and they, you know, said that, well, this is your dad coming to you, letting you know everything's okay and stuff. And so they gifted me that name. So, and you know, the goes back to the old story of it, you know, it only takes one white crow to make a believer or whatever. And, you know, I mean, to see a white crow, an adult one, they're like 1 in 100 million.
Because I've never seen a white crow, I mean,
yeah,
ever.
So that's where that came from.
In the Native American community, the planet Earth is sacred. I mean, so do you think being a Native American, this helps you connect to the energy of our planet better?
I feel it does. But like I said, it's, you know, I still believe that, you know, anybody, if they want to tune into it, can do it or whatever, you know, but it's being around the elders like that, because, you know, we believe that everything has a spirit, even the rocks or whatever, that they all have, you know, some type of energy form there or whatever that you can gain knowledge from. So everything on Mother Earth is sacred.
That reminds me, very many years ago, when I was I can't remember, we were out west in a Indian reservation. This old Indian was sitting on, I swear to God, he must have been 100. He's sitting on his on the front porch of this trinket shop, and I was just, instead of going in the store with my family, I was probably about 8 years old. Mm-hmm. I still remember this man, and he was doing his spoon with his coffee on the front porch, and he was bringing it up real high and letting it fall down in his cup, like maybe by 2 feet. And I'm like, what are you doing? He goes, well, I'm getting these spirits, or evil spirits, out of this this liquid. You just said everything on this planet is sacred. You know, the water, the everything that's living is sacred, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So using your dowsing rods, explain your skills in that.
Well, as I said, you know, working for the phone company as a senior lineman at the time or whatever, I was on the crews that would go out and set telephone poles and put the lines back up and put up new lines and things like that. But so whenever we would go to set up a pole or whatever to dig in the ground, we'd have to locate anything that was in that area to make sure there was nothing where we were going to dig the hole there. And we would use two pieces of number 6 ground wire, about 14 inches long, and just, you know, bend it into an L shape or whatever. And, or basically like a number 7 or whatever. And then use that to walk across the field there or whatever. The rods would cross. As I said, anything metal under the ground, it would pick up. But it's kind of weird because after you get used to doing it or whatever, trusting in it, you could actually ask it, you can walk over something and say, show me the power line. And it wouldn't cross until you passed that power line, even if there were telephone lines or cable TV or anything else buried under there. It would show you that water line every time, and you'd say, okay, now show me the underground telephone line, and it would cross and not show you the power line. But you had to really trust in it to do that or whatever. It's kind of weird because another thing that would affect it is at the time I had some younger people working with me. They could do it also, but if they had been out and we'll just say partaking a little bit of alcoholic spirits the night before or whatever, they couldn't do it. It wouldn't work. So somehow that the alcohol in their system would just nullify it. It's very strange or whatever. So
I remember years ago, my great grandfather was looking for water in his back of his field on his farm. He used the word, they weren't metal. They were like a stick, like a wishbone. And he was holding both ends of the stick, and the stick would point down to where the water was at.
Yes.
And the family kept telling, I remember my uncles telling them, you know, Dad, just call in the county engineer and have them. No. I get it. Where this always works, you know. And sure enough, he found the water with the sticks. But you know, it doesn't work for everybody. It doesn't work for me.
Right. Yeah. My father and grandfather both could witch for water. My dad did it quite a bit. Like if they were going to go out and somebody in town was going to dig a new well or something, they'd ask him to come out and, you know, witch for it. And he, fruit trees are the best limbs to use or whatever for that. And he preferred peach limbs or whatever, peach tree limbs.
Yeah.
I mean, I've done it, but I'm not near as successful at that as what my dad was or whatever. It's amazing. And like I say, probably 98% of it is just believing in it, you know, to have the right attitude to do it or whatever. Now, as I said, with the copper wires or whatever, what they would do is we'd hold them out straight in front of us in my hands or whatever. Whenever you would cross over that underground utility or whatever, they'll cross. They'll come together and cross, point at each other. So it's kind of amazing also that you can use that in investigations and stuff to ask yes or no questions. And like, say, if they say, you know, okay, I want it to cross, if the answer to this question is yes. And it's amazing how it works. It's
because spirits and ghosts, you know, work off energy. So
right.
That was my next question. How have you used that in your investigations? You know?
Yes. Yes. We use it quite a bit. So
can you share a couple of your stories of investigatings that you and your wife have done?
We do well over 25 years. We've done house cleansings and stuff all over. We started in Ohio, and like I say, we've worked on a lot up here in Michigan and stuff. A couple cases, we even had some had a young boy that was also a young lady, and we were able to help them get them to the right people and get help for them. But yes, we've used it on one case, they were having some really weird stuff go on in the home, things getting moved and misplaced and things like that. And we were taking the rods around the house or whatever, and it kept pointing to this one wall in the bathroom. And there was a panel up there on the drywall, and we ended up, it kept pointing to this panel, and we took the panel off. Behind the panel was this probably about a 12-inch long by maybe 10 inches high brown donkey, paper mache donkey, painted with all these symbols all over it. Well, we come to find out this was a brouhaha thing, and what it was placed there for was to help keep the evil spirits out. So we took it out for a while and just cleansed it and everything and put it back in there, and the paranormal activity ceased after that. So it was very cool, you know, the way it worked out. So it's amazing. I mean, some things, you know, it just blows your mind the way it works.
Right. Now, have you come across evil demonic spirits?
Only a couple times. And I hate to use demonic or whatever. I'll just say bad spirits or whatever, mm-hmm. you know, because I think too many people jump on that, you know, that they want to think it's, you know, we got to have an exorcism or whatever.
Right.
When a lot of times just a real thorough house cleansing and calming the people down and making sure, you know, sure say, hey, you can't be, you know, you need to lay off the paranormal shows for a while and things like that. It's just reopening that door up or whatever and things like that. And, you know, it kind of goes back to, you know, the power of intention or whatever, you know.
So, you get very many of those, you know, house cleansing calls.
We do. We are busy. I would say 90% of our investigations are that. I mean, we have got to do, you know, we did Bobby Mackey's in Cincinnati. We did the, slipping my mind. Well, last year we did the Indiana State Sanatorium, which was really an adventure. Mm-hmm. Really nice, cool place. Like I say, advise anybody that if you really want to see a cool place, you should check that out. It's a really neat place. We've been to Moundsville there in West Virginia. As I said, probably 90% of our investigations usually involve just a house cleansing. And I would say over 90% of the time, one good cleansing will work. There have been a few cases where we've had to go back several times or whatever. As I said, one was with this little boy that was having some problems with the possession thing. And it was, it's kind of another thing that I'll just talk about that case a little bit, is that we went to some friends that are into the stones and stuff. And she gave us a bag to give this young man with 5 stones in it. Forgive me for not, you know, I love stones and stuff, but as far as to tell you what the properties are and all that stuff, what they do, mm-hmm. I just know I like this one or whatever.
Right,
yeah. But she gave us this one black one, and she said, whatever you do, make sure that he keeps this one in that bag all, you know, with him all the time. And so this young boy at the time was like 6 years old at the time, and we gave him that bag, and he reached in that bag and picked that black one out right, the very first one, and said, I don't want this one in there. Oh, and really? We said, oh, no, you have to keep that one in there. It has to stay in there. You know, you don't have to take it out or anything, but just it has to stay in the bag. And so, like I say, after that, he did leave it in there and stuff, and things got much, much better. And so, but it's weird how, you know, those things come about like that, and just having the right people around. And it, you know, like I say, it's kind of begin to, you put that power of attention out there, and the right things come to you at that time or whatever to help with different cases and stuff. So
do you believe you can move a spirit on then if you're cleansing the houses?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Or, you know, a lot of people will just say, you know, like where we live right now, we live on the Muskegon River in Everett, Michigan, is where my wife and I live. And energy of the river flowing by, we have spirits in and out of our house and in our yard all the time. But they're just passing through. So, mm-hmm. you know, we haven't had anything negative at all come in or whatever. But we did have one night, we were having a get together at our house there with the team. And we had a little boy come through that had drowned in the river there, and we got him to finally move on or whatever. And we felt really good about that, you know, that we were able to help a young boy or whatever. So, and afterwards we did research on it and come to find out that this young boy had drowned just up the river from us, just probably less than a quarter of a mile, but his whole family had, what happened was he had went out sled riding at the time during the winter and went out onto the ice and fell through the ice and drowned. His younger sister, or older sister, excuse me, went out and she tried to save him, fell in and drowned. And the mother and father also drowned. They went out and tried to save. So the whole family perished, you know.
Wow, yeah.
So, yeah, I believe it was 1872, if I remember right. I'm not positive of that year, but it was in the 1870s there, early 70s, that we were able to find this out and stuff. And like I say, my wife is real good about picking up on names and stuff with the deceased or whatever. And she got this little boy's name, and we were able to go in and check records and verify it. So we got validation. So
how do you feel on building things on top of Indian burial grounds? I mean, the activity comes from that.
Right.
I find that interesting. I get so many stories on this show about activity, either on or near a burial ground.
I'm kind of torn between that because, like I said, you didn't build that house there, right? And develop it or whatever. The first people that did it, I find a little shame in that. You know, it would be like me going in and building a house in the cemetery or something. But also, you know, a lot of that time, you know, we're looking at, it was just that they were ignorant of that. You know, they just thought, well, I need to use this land. And Turtle Island here, which we call the, you know, the Americas, has had inhabitants for, you know, thousands upon thousands of years. So about any place you go, there's going to be a burial mound somewhere, you know, or very close by. So, you know, you just have to do it with respect. And you know, if you start getting some negative stuff, just ask those spirits, say, you know, I'm here for, you know, for the betterment I'll do whatever I can to help you and help Mother Earth here and put your good intentions out there. And I truly believe, you know, things will work out.
All right. So you're from the Traverse City area?
Actually, my wife and I, we live almost, I'll see if I can do this for you, because like I said, I tell everybody I'm a transplant. I've been up here since 2008. So my wife and I live, we're about an hour and a half from Traverse City. Our team is spread out. We've got members in Houghton Lake, and then our leader, Daniel Mackin, and his wife, Stephanie, are from Traverse City.
So do you do most of your investigations in Michigan, or do you, you mentioned Moundsville.
Yeah, we travel some also. Most of our investigations are here in Michigan, and we're not strictly into just paranormal. Two of the members on the team, Deb and RJ DeRoos, have a UFO Paracon up here every year in September that they put on. So we do some UFO investigations. Also the cryptic. We've done a few Bigfoot huntings and things like that.
In your native heritage, have you been taught about, I mean, I'm sure you have, about the skinwalkers, Wendigos, and Bigfoot cryptids, or any other creature like that?
Absolutely. Yes, absolutely. Had a lot of teachings on that. My opinion is I believe that Bigfoot is an interdimensional. I think they can change dimensions. My wife and I do a lot. We go to Arkansas quite often, to Hot Springs, Arkansas, and dig crystals. And there's a lot of activity around crystal mines and stuff, UFO plus Bigfoot activity. And I truly believe that energy from those crystals vibration draws that type of energy in and stuff. And I also believe that has something to do with the portal part of it. So,
yeah, I was asked that question a few years ago. I had a guest on my show, and he's a Bigfoot investigator out of Minnesota. And he hit me with the question, did I think UFOs and Bigfoot could be related? I didn't, at that time, it just floored me because I really didn't know how to answer that question. But, you know, you look back on it, wherever you find a lot, usually a lot of Bigfoot activity is around water, or where a UFO was spotted underwater or near that area. It really blew my mind when he asked me because I wasn't prepared for that, you know, because I didn't think about it, you know. But now since then, like 3 or 4 years later, I'm like, you know, wow, this dude was right on a lot of these reports I'm getting.
Absolutely. Yes. Yes. You're in a awfully awesome area to look for Bigfoot down there where you're located at, mm-hmm. or whatever. As I said, the first one I ever come where I actually seen something, you know, and I know what I seen because I seen it long enough that it was in the road and stuff, was in a little town called Freeport, outside of Freeport, mm-hmm. which is between Cambridge and Cadiz on 250 there, mm-hmm. outside of Cambridge or whatever. It's out past Salt Fork and stuff.
It's
and,
like right there in the middle of Ohio. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So, but yeah, so it's an awesome place. And then also a few years ago, Deb and RJ and my wife and I, we went down to Serpent Mound for the when the eclipse happened on the equinox. We were staying at a place out in the country there or whatever, and actually saw a Bigfoot on a crossing a fence line just at dusk or whatever, and all four of us seen it. So that was really cool. Unfortunately, by the time we grabbed our phones and tried to snap a picture, it was gone. It was just very quick, but all four of us seen it, so it was quite unique.
All right, so do you believe in the power of, like, the medicine man or, say, witch doctor, the powers they have that they can transform into a Bigfoot? I mean, I've heard those stories.
Yes, part of the shape-shifting, there are mm-hmm. people that have that ability. I have seen it in ceremonies and stuff, like in sweat lodges and things like that, mm-hmm. where the most amazing things can occur in a ceremony like that. Again, too, though, I think it's just putting your mind in the right place, you know, and focusing on what you're looking for to find those things or whatever. You know, it's you got to leave the daily things behind you and focus on what's around you at that time or whatever. And, you know, with the way the world is today, sometimes it's really hard to do that.
But, right.
You know, it's, you know, trying to get your head in the right spot and be aware of your surroundings, because so many of us today, you know, I mean, it's amazing how many times wife and I will drive down the road, both our totems are red-tailed hawks, and we'll have a red-tailed hawk fly right in front of us or whatever, and usually that's telling me at the time I need to slow down. Mm-hmm. I need to watch my surroundings or whatever. And I'd say probably 90% of the time, if I see a hawk fly right in front of us like that, and I slow down, I'll go up the road in a half mile, and there'll be usually one of Michigan's finest sitting there in a patrol car or whatever, or in Ohio also or whatever. But yeah,
some type of warning, yeah.
But it's amazing to me also how many times, like, we'll see workers along the road and stuff, and there'll be a red-tailed hawk flying over them and stuff, or just people standing around, and they're on their phones texting or whatever and missing out on what's going on right above them or what, you know. So
what do you have coming up? What's any investigations you're looking forward to or going to?
Well, we've got in the end of the month here, we are going to up in Sault Ste. Marie, Michigan Paracon is going on. We're going to that. And then we always go to a little town called Brimley, and it has a Native American burial grounds there where they have it's Chippewa, and they have what they call spirit boxes that they put on top of the graves. And they're wooden boxes about 3 foot by 2 foot that are on top of the grave. And then what's put in them are meaningful things that person carried in life. A lot of them, like if they were a pipe carrier, their pipe will be in there, and maybe their medicine pouch and things like that. But we like to investigate around that area a lot because there's a lot of activity. It's like right on the beach there, so we can get down to the beach. We don't go in the cemetery itself there, just out of respect, you know. but we do get a lot of things in that area. We use EchoVox a lot, which we've had really good results with over the years. We do have an investigation coming up, I believe October or whatever. We're going to be doing the Opera House here in Cadillac or whatever, which we've done before and got some really good results. So they've asked us to come back and check some things out. So that's what we've got going on right now for now or whatever.
Where can people go to get a hold of you for investigating? Or
if they want to go, we're on Facebook. It's MAPIT, M-A-P-I-T. And again, that stands for Michigan Area Paranormal Investigative Team. And they can, you know, get hold of us there. And if they need an investigation or whatever, we're more than happy to help out. Or we've even had people contact us from out of state or whatever. And luckily, I like to say, have friends all over the United States that we can, if we can't make it there, we will do everything we can to put you in contact with a team that can get out there and help you. So, and that's what we're really about, is we love to be able to try and help people.
That's all it's all about, you know. Well, I want to thank you for coming on the show today. And before I get off here, I want to ask you, what are you, Apache?
Lakota.
Lakota. Okay. You know, okay, cool. I did a story, a couple years back. It's on one of my episodes. I think it was, Indian Johnny. It was a really good story. I got it from a fellow out of Pennsylvania, and it was based off the Lakota Indian tribe. You looked that one up. That's a cool story. True story. All right. I want to thank you for coming on the show.
Well, I appreciate it. And, you know, maybe we can get down that way and do an investigation together sometime when we're down that way in Ohio. So one of the places I've always wanted to investigate, and we haven't had the chance to yet down in Ohio, there is Junaid Hutton. It's outside of New Philadelphia, and it was a Moravian school during the 1700s. The British went into the school there and massacred like 35 people. They bashed their heads in and stuff, and only one young man escaped or whatever. And I've always wanted to investigate that area there. It's just outside of New Philadelphia, Ohio.
Yeah, I was thinking about that place in Ohio. It was Mansfield Reformatory. I don't know if you've ever been there. Hillview Manor in Sharon, PA. That's not far from where I live, near Youngstown. We have a place. I live in Newton Falls, so I have a little village. We have, I think, the second oldest covered bridge, the oldest active covered bridge in Ohio, built in 1837, if I'm not mistaken. It's still also known as the Crybaby Bridge. So if you go there after dark and you walk along the sidewalk along the side of the bridge, you can actually hear a baby crying. They say a mother threw her baby into the river years ago. I haven't been there yet. I haven't, you know, I live like a mile away from it. I'm going to try that one of these nights.
Awesome. That sounds very interesting.
Okay. So do you do primarily residential or business or both?
Both.
You prefer one over the other, or they're both exciting?
They're both exciting. Sometimes it just depends. Like I said, that everyone is an adventure. So I'll just leave it at that. I like both.
I want to thank you for coming on and being patient with me in this time lapse and glitches and everything else. I wish you and your teams best of luck in your investigations, and put the links at the bottom of this episode where they can contact you.
Well, thank you so much for having me on. I appreciate it very much.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Thank you.
Well, you have a blessed day, and I hope, like I say, sometime that maybe we can get together and do something together. That would be awesome.
Yeah, next time you're in the Ohio area, you know.
Yeah, I would love that.
Thank you, Barry White Crow. It was my pleasure having you on the show. Please check out his links at the bottom of this episode. Thank you very much for stopping by and listening. I'm your host, Al Cooley, Ghost in the Valley Podcast.